if you're interested, intrigued about this thing we call church membership, then I'd really encourage you to come and have a chat to myself, Rob or Gareth. We'd love to share with you in its entirety what church membership is, why do we have it? And so encourage you, if you call Hutt City Baptist your church home and you're not currently in church membership, to come and have that conversation with us. We'd love to share that with you. Thank you. Rob.
Good morning, everyone. Last week when I shared, I got some really interesting responses from people. You know, I had one person come to me and say, "Don't you feel you share too much, Rob?" I was like, "Ooh, ouch." I had someone else come to me literally in tears and shake my hand and say, "Rob, you make me feel normal." I didn't know what to take that. I had another person tell me, "You do share a lot from the front." And I said, "Yeah, you get the good Rob, you get the bad Rob, you get the emotional Rob, you get the happy Rob." I said, "It's a cultural thing. Here in New Zealand and some parts of the Western world, some of that's just a little uncomfortable. But for us Italians and Latinos in general, right? Whether it's the Mediterranean or Central or South America, we let it out. You know, everyone knows how we feel. In fact, a sign of your distancing from someone, if you were to say good morning to them and they said, good morning, how you doing? Good. That's a sign of actual distance. It's the opposite effect to what we think is close here. Because if they're saying good, they're lying to you. That's the way we think. That's why when you're in Italy, you can't get past a conversation so quickly. Anyone who's been to Italy, you just see people, they stop in the middle of the street and they start talking. They're just saying hello. Because you don't say good to someone that you're acquainted with. You tell them, if they're asking you how you're doing, you let the whole thing out. And then the hands go flying everywhere. But that's the sign of love. It's a sign of connection. It's a sign of community. That we give permission to people to be real and not judge them on that scale of, you know, because, you know, you get that person, every time you ask them how you're doing, they give you that look and you're thinking, oh my goodness, here we go again, right? But there's actually a comfort in being able to tell people how you feel, where you're at, what you're struggling with. Got this video. If there's some sound on this, Graham, so if you can put the video up, it's sound. So in Italy, you've been confined to home because of the coronavirus. So what do Italians do? Now, you can go online, you can see some really exquisite things, you know, like opera singers coming out on the balcony. All this one I like because it's so real. Because that's what it looks like. You go to Rome, or you go to Milan, or you go to Naples, and there's all these apartment blocks. You're all looking into each other. And someone starts singing, another one starts singing, another one's yelling, another one pulls out a trumpet, and then it just goes on. And they don't care. Because the whole point, they're in it together. That's something Netflix can't do. It's something that coronavirus can't separate. is that sense of community, of realness. You know, when I lived in Rome, you could see all those apartment blocks. That was in Naples, but Rome is very similar. You got these apartment blocks for all over the place. Now, all you see on the outside are the walls of the apartment blocks, but on the inside, there's a big courtyard. And not only are you looking out the front to the apartment block in front of you, but on the backside, you're looking at the people on the inside. And I remember my first time when I left Australia, I was 17, I moved into my grandparents' apartment, and I had this shoebox of a bedroom, and the window was right there, and it looked straight across three balconies from the other block of flats right next to us. And I could literally stick my head out and look into the kitchen of the people right there. And if they had an argument or a fight, or the people below or the people across, we'd all hear it. And it's really invasive, you know, coming from Australia and Sydney, and we had our own spaces, and, you know, the people were over there, and, you know, if they fought, they all fought quietly. In Italy, there's no such thing. And so when people would come up to me and say, you shouldn't be saying those things to your mother, you know that, right? Oh, how do you know? Oh, yeah, of course, you're just over there, you can hear it, you know. But also, you get really strange things, like people leaving food at your door when they hear that someone's sick. You don't know who's left it there. Or you get a card. Or you get a yell from across the way. Hey, I'm thinking about you. Go well tomorrow in your exam, Rob. You're like, yeah, who was that? It's community. It's community. When we talk about church, we're called to be a community of people. Now, I'm a little behind on this series. This is the sermon I was going to preach last week. Today, I really wanted to actually tackle a little bit about what membership means, but I'll do a bit of that next week, along with some other things. But today, I want to challenge us because we're in the middle of a pretty interesting time in this world at the moment. I get to go home today and not watch football. You know how depressing that is? Yeah, amen, huh? We're in the middle of a situation, and we as the church are going to be challenged by this. And it's not just the coronavirus. There's going to be economic ramifications from this. There's going to be different worldviews coming out of this. The early church lived in a very, very difficult time where politics and warfare and, you know, empires dominated the scene, and they chose to come together as God's community. In fact, people were really weirded out by them. And I know I'll be using this verse very often. I've already have, and I'll continue to use it, because this is so important for us to grasp. Now, I was at a couple of home groups this week, and we had quite a lovely couple of conversations around what does this look like for us today. And I'm not saying that we need to be doing exactly what they're doing, because they live in a different context, in a different time in history, in a different place. I'm not saying we need to be doing this, but I want to focus on that one word, fellowship. Now, if you're here last week, you know what fellowship means, right? The word fellowship in Greek is koinonia. It means intercourse. Now, it's not the kind of intercourse you're thinking of, even though in English, fellowship actually means that. The origin of the word fellowship dates back to the 12th century, and apparently it meant sexual intercourse. And in fact, the English were getting all put out by this American church that started using the name differently. In fact, in the Dictionary of Americanism that came out in 1848, this was the comment: to fellowship with is to hold communion with, to unite in doctrine and discipline. This barbarism now appears with disgusting frequency in reports of ecclesiastical conventions and in religious newspapers in general. You never thought fellowship was that deep. But it's an important word. Intercourse also has other connotations. In the shipping industry, when they have convoys, they have an intercourse pact. and that is that they will look after each other as they cross the ocean. In fact, the US in 1809 issued a non-intercourse pact with the British and the French to stay neutral in the Napoleonic Wars. They were saying, we are not going to connect with anyone under a British or a French flag because we want to stay neutral, a non-intercourse pact. In the Bible, fellowship has a number of different meanings. The word koinonia can be translated differently. In Acts chapter 2, it's fellowship, but we can see it in different ways. In Romans 15, the word they use is contribution. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, it's participation. It's the same word, koinonia. In 2 Corinthians, it's of sharing in. And in Philippians, twice it comes up, once as partnership and another time as coming, sharing in, or common sharing in. So this word koinonia, this meaning of fellowship, has different ways of expressing itself. And I think this is actually really important for us. Because we Italians get it. And I'm not trying to make you all Italian, not everyone's perfect. but this word of fellowship is actually really important. If we were to break it down today, this is what it would look like. It's to serve, to care, to pray, to learn, to teach, to give, and as Jesus puts it, to die for the sake of the gospel. Fellowship means connection. It means even if you're separated by a street or a wall, we're still connected. If we're in quarantine for 14 days, we're still connected. It doesn't stop me from serving, caring, praying, learning, teaching, giving, and together dying for the sake of the gospel. This is what fellowship is. And this is what we're called to be as the church. Now, in the early church, in Acts chapter 2, there's a pattern that they've put out and said, this is what we're doing. This is what fellowship means to us. What does it mean to us today? What does that look like for us today? What does community as God's people look like? For some people, it's like off. Where are you guys going today, by the way? Akatarawa, there you go. And you're jumping off a cliff or something? Oh, okay. People call that fellowship, right? It's different for everybody. But it's, yeah, exactly. Go for it. It's different for a lot of us, but it doesn't separate us. It brings us together. This is where we connect. For a lot of us, it's just going out for a walk. It's abseiling, isn't it? Is this what you guys are doing today? No.
Yes, maybe.
Yep, maybe. And that's a point of connection. You want to trust somebody, have them hold a rope, but behind you there's the bottom of a cliff. You know? Talk about fellowship right there, hey? But that's part of connecting, bringing us together. What does connection, community look like for us as a church? What does it look like? I've got 4 points I want to share with you because I'm Baptist. I normally have 3, but I'm going for 4 this morning. And it's 4 points I think are really important to just kind of lay a foundation for what community should look like. What are the core aspects of what makes community community? First one is unity. Comes out of coming together. Now, a country club is something that people have sometimes equated to the church. I was having a conversation this last week with someone at the movies, and they were telling me, oh, yeah, you guys are just like a glorified country club. And I said, yeah, it could be. Yep, but there's a bit of a difference. Sure, there's something that brings us together. You know, you pay a membership, right? You got a tithe. You come in, you got to give. But with a country club, you got this. You know, you receive instead of giving, because once you pay your dues, you're expecting something in return, right? You're served instead of serving. You don't go there to clean the club up, right? That's up for those guys we're paying for. You have rights as a member instead of responsibilities. And you have entitlements instead of sacrifices. With a church, it's completely different. It's actually flipped over. You know, the church, you pay for the privilege of giving, of serving, of being responsible for what's going on around, and for sacrificing. It's not a really good sales plan, is it? Join our church. We give you the privilege of giving and serving and being responsible and sacrificing. But that's actually what it's about. But we can't do that unless we're in unity. Because that's actually a really important factor. What brings down clubs and churches all over the place is disunity. We fight over silly things. We split over our differences. Ephesians 1, 5 to 15 says, "For this reason, ever since I heard about your faith in the Lord Jesus and your love for all God's people, I have not stopped giving thanks for you, remembering you in all my prayers." And if you think of the two things there that Paul is really, really happy about, he's happy about their faith in Jesus and he's happy about their love for all of God's people. And I like that word "all." For those happy, clappy penties and those really strict, arm-folding brethren, we love them all. We love this kind of music and that kind of music. We love what you're wearing and what you're not wearing. Well, maybe not. Okay, we draw the line there. Okay? But there is this all of God's people. All of God's people. Ephesians 4:3 says, "Make every effort to keep yourselves united in the Spirit, binding yourselves together with peace." Make every effort. And I always come back to this as well, one of my favorite prayers, Jesus in John 17, his one long prayer talks about keep them together, talks about unity. He's praying to God. He's not talking about give them a great church or give them a great evangelistic plan or, you know, protect them. No, keep them together, because by their unity, the world will know. Unity is an important, important core element of community. In Italy, you know, with a family, you know, sometimes it can be abusive. You've just got to submit to the family. Well, I interpret it as being abusive at times. But it all comes out of the importance of being together. My grandmother was small and round. But boy, man, I don't know how she gets momentum in getting those hands to you. Don't you say that at the table. I don't know how she got across the table and hit, you know. But for her, it was important. The importance was, this is family. But we don't do that here at church. And nor do I condone that kind of behavior. I don't know how she did it, by the way. But for her, it was so important. How important is it for us that we make every effort? Sometimes it's not. If we don't like the music, or we don't like this, or we don't like that, fall into that consumeristic trap of saying, I'll go to another church. And they don't give a good kids program, or they don't do this right, or this is not going well. My kid doesn't like this. And then we wonder why our kids grow up and don't go to church. Unity requires sacrifice. It brings me to that second point, servanthood. It's interesting. So if you were to ask me, what does it mean to be a Christian? You know, evangelists use really positive words like hope and love and grace and these lovely words. Jesus doesn't. He uses words like, you've got to deny yourself, you've got to be crucified with Christ, you've got to crucify the flesh, you've got to lose your life, you've got to take up your cross, you've got to die to sin. Try using that as a sales pitch. But that's what we're called to be as Christians. It's actually really hard. And it's even harder if you have to do it by yourself. Jesus says this, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. Deny yourself. What does that mean? What does that look like? How do I deny myself? But there's the challenge. And you know what? He says it this way. He says, do it daily. This process that we call as Christians sanctification happens daily. It has to happen daily because you know what? Yesterday wasn't a good day for me. And you heard last Sunday wasn't, the week before, that wasn't a good week for me. Daily, I've got to re-sanctify myself before the Lord and deny myself again as I head out. It's the basis of servanthood. So here's the question. Who is the greatest servant? Jesus? Would you say? Come on, normally someone jumps up and says, Jesus. I was hoping either that or you're still thinking, I've got to deny myself. What am I doing? Who is the greatest servant? Well, guess what Jesus did? He denied himself. He was crucified. He crucified the flesh. He lost his life. He took up the cross and he died to sin. So you and I are called to be like Jesus. We're called to be servants. And the basis of being a servant is just that. Paul gives this great description of Jesus that challenges us. He says this in Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 to 8. He says, who, Jesus, being in the very nature of God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. And the biggest catch with these verses is the part that I left out, which is actually verse 5, and it says this, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as who? This is not just a description of Jesus. This is a description of how we need to be with each other. And that's a challenge. That's a huge challenge. Tom Rainer, who is kind of like the intersection of Gallup and Barna, he does all these researches surveys on churches in America. And he came up with these 10 points, the 10 dominant factors in dying churches. And they're quite interesting. Some of them will jump out at you. Some of them will be like, oh, yeah, you know, worship wars. I've been part of, this is my 7th church. I've been associate pastor in 5, senior in 2. And I can tell you, out of those 7 churches, the biggest splits we had in 2 of those churches were all over worship. Worship wars, what music you play, what music you don't play, how the teams get along, all of that. It's just, it can get really bad. Not only that, but who's been in a church meeting that's gone way too long? I found that idea of program-driven being very interesting. Inordinate demands on leadership, appearance focus, attitudes of entitlement, greater concern about change than the gospel, anger and hostility, gossip, discipleship, apathy. He underlined it all by saying, in general, I give you these 10 points, but I think the biggest thing that encapsulates all of this is a lack of servanthood. It's all about what I want, what I don't want, what I like, what I don't like. And if we could eliminate that kind of language, if we could eliminate that kind of mindset, that mentality, then churches might actually be quite thriving. This is a little self-serving, isn't it? Honoring your leaders as an important aspect of community. But I'm actually not talking about us as the pastoral staff, though that can be part of it. I'm actually talking about the elders. In the seven churches that I've been a part of, in three different countries, through four different Baptist denominations, it's the same problem people have. For some reason, the word elder evokes some very negative responses from people. Whether they're uncomfortable with authority, whether they're uncomfortable with someone telling them what to do, or someone being aware of how they're acting or being, or whatever it is. And if you get each elder, even in this church, individually, everybody will say they're wonderful people. You bring them together and you put the title elders, and all of a sudden they're this beast. And when it comes to community, you want to fracture a community, attack the leaders. It's as simple as that. Anyone here with military experience, knock the general out, the rest will just kind of float away. Hit the heart and soul, the leadership, and you're done. How do you think Satan works then, huh? You want a thriving community? It starts with honoring your leaders. And I do include the pastoral staff in that very much, but in this instance, I really want to emphasize the eldership. It's a thankless job. You've got to make tough decisions, and everyone's got an opinion on how you should or shouldn't do it. On top of the already busy lives that they already lead with their own issues. But that's who we are as a Baptist church. That's the way we function. We've got to respect our elders. Every once in a while, you know, it'd be nice if you said thank you. Or that you appreciate their time. When I was at a power, I preached a sermon. It was part of, we've done it here, the We series. I did a series just on eldership and what that meant for a church. And one of the older people came up to me. She said, I always pray this prayer over the eldership. It was beautiful. Colossians 1:9, she said, she goes, we continually ask God to fill you with the knowledge of his will through all the wisdom and understanding that the Spirit gives. And I found that really encouraging. I took it straight back to our eldership and I laid it there. But then I went and looked at verses 10 to 11 and found that equally encouraging. It says this, so that you may live a life worthy of the Lord and please him in every way, bearing fruit in every good work, growing in the knowledge of God, being strengthened with all power according to his glorious might, so that you may have great endurance and patience, and giving joyful thanks to the Father who has qualified you to share in the inheritance of his holy people in the kingdom of light. We've worked really hard as a church so that the elders are not just a group of putting out fires. I pray that you encourage them, even when they frustrate you, and even when they make decisions that you don't understand, because the basis of community is leadership. A good, strong, supported leadership. If it was my grandmother, she would tell you, don't argue with the grandmother, and you wouldn't dare. We have the freedom to argue with our elders. The only thing I would say is, do it out of love and show that love. Honoring your leaders. So the three things, unity, servanthood, honoring your leaders, and lastly, making time for each other. Do I need to keep going on Acts chapter 2? the most encouraging thing out of this coronavirus is if you go to YouTube, you know how many Italians are singing across from each other. I had to choose one from about 100 of them. Because community to them is so important. I hope and pray that community for you, our community here, is more important as well. Yeah, it's not just words, but that it will be intentional, that you would seek each other out, that you would support one another, that you'll be servants to one another. Not because you like me or don't like me, or you like them or you don't like them, because through that, you're honoring God. And the world may see that the church is not a country club. That is far more than that. Amen. I ask the music team to come up. As they get into this last song, just take a moment. You can stand if you want. If you want to worship and just get into it, go for it. But if you just want to sit and reflect, please do that. Take a moment to let things sink in. What does community mean for you? What does it mean to be part of God's church? Are you feeling like you're a part of it? And why not? Do you need maybe to turn to somebody here and say sorry? Or, you know, break protocol and give them a hug. Just don't sing to them. Dear Lord God, I just want to pray as we come here together as your people, as your community. Challenged by your calling in our lives together as Hutt City Baptist Church. What does that mean? What does that look like for us? For some of us, it's off. We're going to head out with our brothers and sisters. We're going to go climb a mountain. I feel at peace with my family, and I feel at peace with you, God. For some of us, it's life groups. For some of us, it's just being here on a Sunday morning and knowing that life is more than just me alone at home.